Dogs should never be around kids who are learning how to walk and are too full of physical energy. Kids need to learn not to pull on ears and tails and must be taught never to play tug of war with a dog. If a child is becoming too rough, that's when you hold her and redirect her, or show her a different way to touch. The more repetitions you do, the more she learns the correct way to approach the dog. Eventually, the dog sees that the child means no harm. I taught Andre and Calvin early on how to recognize cues from a dog's body language to learn when it was and wasn't an appropriate time to touch the dog. I had them help me feed the dogs and taught them never to give the dogs the food dish until they were sitting and calm submissive. Instruct your children on the correct way to meet any new dog. No talk, touch, or eye contact until the dog is comfortable and calm submissive around you. As soon as my boys could walk, they were toddling through that pack and owning the place. Do as I did. Condition your children to be pack leaders from birth. A generation of dogs will thank you for it. Visitors. How to treat visitors coming to your home can be a difficult issue for a dog. Most people want their dogs to be, if not their protectors, then their alarm systems. If a stranger comes to the house late at night, owners naturally want their dogs to alert them to this. At the same time, they want their dogs to behave and be docile when friends or the mailman comes to the door. It's tough to have it both ways. How is the dog supposed to know the difference if the person is on the other side of the door? It's up to the dog's owner to teach him polite doorway manners and enforce those manners when necessary. When a new visitor comes to the door, make sure your dog stops barking right away and is in a calm, submissive, seated position when the new person enters. Do not allow any jumping up on the guest. At the same time, instruct any new person who comes into your home never to greet your dog in the traditional but wrong way. No getting down to the dog's level and petting and talking to it. Your guest must learn the rules I use for visitors to the dog psychology center. No touch, no talk, and no eye contact at first. Your dog must be allowed to politely get used to your guest's scent before your guest gives any affection. Your dog has the ability to remember thousands upon thousands of different scents, so after one or two visits, your guest will be familiar to your dog. But with every new person your dog meets, repeat this mannerly ritual. The dreaded mailman can also become an issue for a dog. Since dogs live in a cause-and-effect world, if your dog becomes accustomed to barking when the mailman comes, this is how it works in his canine mind. The mailman comes. I bark and growl. The mailman goes away. I scared him away. In some dominant aggressive dogs, this can revive their predator instinct and potentially incite aggression toward the mailman. For you, the owner, this can translate into having to go pick up your mail from the post office, or, in a worst-case scenario, into a lawsuit. The U.S. Postal Service takes the safety of its carriers extremely seriously these days. In the case of one dog featured on Dog Whisperer, not only the owner of the offending dog, but the entire neighborhood lost its mail privileges. As you can imagine, this didn't make the owner very popular with her neighbors. We dealt with this issue by conditioning the dog not to bark at all when a stranger approached the door. Once we had made progress in this area, I dressed up in a postal uniform and came to the door again and again and again until the dog had lost its desire to bark at me. This was a trade-off for the owner. She chose to give up her intruder warning system in order to get her mail privileges back. Remember, you can always get a burglar alarm to replace your dog as an alert system, but you can never replace your mail carrier. Going to the groomer and the vet. Anytime we bring a dog into a new and unfamiliar situation, it's important that we prepare him for the environment he's going to be entering. Most people will bring along cookies to try to calm their dog. But if the dog is already in a panicked mode, that's probably not going to work. Remember, dogs have no concept of what a groomer is. They don't understand why they have to have veterinary checkups. Very few dogs do not protest when they're being groomed or taken to the vet for the first time. Very few do not become tense or nervous. These are very unnatural situations for them. This makes it necessary for the groomer and the vet to act as behaviorists, as well as do the jobs they are there to perform. And some are not capable of doing this. It is not their job. It's up to you to help make it a more comfortable experience for your dog. Before going to the vet's office, it's important that you hold your dog and touch him in the same ways the doctor will hold him. This is something you should do gradually, but on a regular basis, long before the visit. The brain needs to get conditioned to be touched in some areas that the dog wouldn't normally be touched. Most of us touch our dogs while giving affection, touching their heads, stroking them, scratching their bellies and backs. A doctor will open your dog's mouth, check his ears and eyes, check his behind. You can increase your dog's likelihood of success by playing doctor at home. Get everyone involved, even the kids. Have someone wear the same kind of coat your vet wears. Let your dog get comfortable around some of the tools your vet uses, even if you're only using toy versions. Get him accustomed to and comfortable with the alcohol smells. You can give your dog massages or treats during these sessions to create a positive association. It's the same thing when it comes to the groomer. The only dogs that are naturally comfortable around groomers are those that are from a lineage of show dogs. Somehow, they seem to inherit their parents' calmness with regard to the process of grooming. For other dogs, it can be a nightmare. Remember Josh, the grooming gremlin? I can't tell you the number of clients I have who dread going to their dog's groomers more than they dread going to their own dentists. Because I'm a very competitive human being, I've always loved a challenge. For me, it's a thrill to work with an unstable dog and try to help him become balanced. So when I worked as a groomer in San Diego and was handed a dog like Josh, it was a pleasure for me. It's no different from a cowboy whose job it is to ride a bull or a wild horse. We get a thrill from it. We don't want to harm the animals. We just want to tame them. What I saw was an opportunity to tame the animal in these dogs, while also making them look good on the outside. If the dog was easy, then great. I'd do it faster. But a difficult dog wasn't anything negative for me. Of course, the dogs picked up on my positive energy, so I was able to make it a very pleasant experience for them. However, I understand why most groomers dread these dogs. They hate being handed a dog that might bite them, and they unconsciously blame the dog. The dogs pick up on this negative energy, and it exacerbates their anxiety. The truth of the matter is, dogs act this way because their owners never properly prime them for the situation. Just like preparing for the vet, you can set up scenarios to condition your dog gradually to be more comfortable at the groomers. Buy some clippers or scissors and try them on your dog to gauge his reaction well ahead of time. If the dog is nervous, wait until he's hungry, feed him, and then while he's eating, try snipping the scissors or clippers near him. Do this a few times. He'll begin to associate these tools with eating time, which will make for a more pleasant experience at the groomers. Most important, and I can't stress this enough, before you take your dog to the vet's office or the groomers, or before the mobile grooming service arrives at your home, take your dog for a long, vigorous walk. Ideally, you should walk your dog as usual before you leave the house, and then once you arrive at the vet's or groomers, take him for another shorter walk around the block. If your dog arrives at a new location having exercised, he'll have less pent-up energy and will be more receptive to a new, possibly fear-inducing situation. If your dog associates going to any off-site location with more walking and bonding time with you, he'll begin to look forward to it. Adding treats that your dog enjoys will help too, but spending quality time walking with his pack leader will taste better to him than any doggy biscuit on the market. Going to the dog park. Dog parks, especially off-leash parks, are hotbed issues in many American communities. For your dog, a dog park can be a welcome break from his routine. The dog park can be used to help your dog increase or maintain his social skills, and perhaps give him some fun running and playing with members of his own kind. But that's all you should expect from a dog park. It is not a place for your dog to work off his excess energy. It is never, ever to be used as a substitution for a walk. Because whenever you put a number of unfamiliar dogs together, you run the risk of conflict. The power of the pack is strong in a dog. But remember, at the Dog Psychology Center, it sometimes takes me weeks to successfully introduce a new dog to the pack. And my pack is made up of already balanced and stable dogs. Do you honestly know that all the dogs at your neighborhood dog park are balanced and stable? Are you absolutely certain that your dog is? A dog park is an environment that is behind walls, and every time you incarcerate many animals in one place, you're going to see scuffles. Does this routine sound familiar to you? You're tired. It's been a long day. You don't feel like walking your dog. So you throw your dog in the car. Your dog is overexcited. You say, "It's okay, Rex. We're going to the dog park." Your dog picks up on your energy and your signals. He recognizes scents and landmarks and figures out where you're going. He starts to get excited and jump up and down in the car. You think, "Oh, he's so happy he's going to the dog park." No, that's not happiness. That's excitement. And you should know by this point in the book that excitement for a dog does not equal happiness. It usually equals unexpressed, frustrated energy. So, what are you doing? You're bringing a frustrated, overexcited dog to a dog park. Depending on the dog, that can be a recipe for disaster. When a dog with excited, frustrated, anxious, or dominant energy gets to a dog park, the dogs there are going to sense his energy immediately. This energy will be interpreted as unstable. And remember, dogs don't naturally nurture instability. So the other dogs will either approach him, challenge him, or run away from him because he's too packed with a very explosive, negative energy. Seeing those other dogs move away from him can send the unstable dog into predator or charge mode, because that's the easiest way for him to release frustration. A dog in this mode can get in trouble, attacking another dog, and then all the other dog owners will start judging him. Some owners will start figuring out when this dog usually comes to the park, and will try to bring their dogs 30 minutes before or after that. When the dog does encounter these owners, they will send him negative energy, which he'll pick up on. The dog park is no longer a positive experience for him. Of course, you already know my recommendation for what you should do before taking your dog to the dog park, don't you? Walk him. Take at least a 30-minute walk at home. Then, when you've parked your car near the dog park, walk him around the neighborhood there. If he's a high-energy dog, use a backpack. Remember, he's supposed to be using the dog park to work on his social skills, not as a substitute for regular exercise. Drain as much of his excited energy as you can. Then take him to the dog park when his energy level is close to zero. That way, when he gets to the dog park, he'll be relaxed, but will still move forward and engage with the other dogs. This will encourage more healthy social interaction. Compare it to going to meet your friend at a Starbucks. You're not going to sit and chat at Starbucks when you're all hyped up, ready to go dancing or jogging around the block, are you? No. You're going to go after the gym, after work, after going out at night, when you're calm and ready to relax. That's when you engage your friend on a healthy social level. Dogs are much the same. The calmer the dogs at the dog park are, the less likely they will be to chase one another. The less they chase one another, the less likely they will be to nip one another. The less they nip one another, the less likely they will be to get into a fight. Don't punch out at the park. Often, an owner's behavior at the park is as much at fault as is her lack of preparation before she arrives. She gets to the park, lets her dog go, and then spends the rest of the time totally disengaged, standing in one place, gabbing with the other owners. The owner sees this time as a chance to relax from the pressures of having a dog, to punch out from the job for a while. But remember, being a pack leader is a 24/7 responsibility. This is not a satisfying pack experience for the dog, because the dog is completely on his own, with no guidance from his pack leader. This isn't to say you should be in the middle of the pack, engaging your dog at all times. It does mean, though, that you should be on the alert, not standing in one place, but moving around the park and constantly connecting with your dog through calm, assertive voice, eye contact, and energy. You must know your dog's body language and how to snap him out of it if an interaction seems to be turning into a confrontation. If a dog does misbehave or is challenged or bullied by another dog, don't react with soft energy. Don't nurture dominant, fearful, or aggressive behavior by comforting the dog or petting him. Don't let your dog hide or cower between your legs. Always clean up after your dog, and never ever leave your dog unsupervised in a dog park. If you have successfully established yourself as your dog's pack leader, your dog will be looking to you for his cues as to how to behave. Don't let him down. Remember, your dog has four choices when interacting with other dogs: fight, flight, avoid, or submit. If your dog ignores or avoids other dogs at the park, that doesn't mean he's a social misfit. When you're walking in downtown Los Angeles at noon on a work day, you don't say hi to everybody you meet, do you? Of course not. You ignore most of the people you pass. You don't introduce yourself to every stranger you meet in a crowded elevator. For a dog, ignoring is also part of normal social behavior. A healthy, balanced dog knows how to avoid others as a way of preventing conflict and keeping his disposition stable. There aren't any agreed-upon statistics on dog park fights, injuries, and deaths in the United States, but there have been enough such incidents to provoke many communities to try to ban off-leash parks altogether. Dogs that do best there are usually those socialized to them at a very young age. Clearly, there are some dogs that should simply not be taken to a dog park, period. Dominant, aggressive dogs should never be taken there. A fearful or nervous dog shouldn't be taken there. However, this is not a solution to helping him overcome that fear. Fear is a signal for any dominant-type dogs in the park to attack your dog. Under no circumstances should you ever take a sick dog to the park. Not only could he infect other dogs, but dominant dogs will pick up on his illness as weakness. Never take more than 3 dogs at a time to a dog park, and take more than one only if you are certain of each dog's temperament. Female dogs in heat can cause dog park fights. So can bringing food to the park. The presence of food can trigger fights. At any public dog park, there is no way you can predict the temperament of every dog that shows up. To socialize your dog around other canines, there are many safer alternatives. You can find dog-walking friends and walk your dogs together. The best way for dogs to get to know one another as a pack. Then, begin by letting these dogs get to know one another in more relaxed play situations, carefully making note of each dog's behavior and response. Stay involved and correct your dog as necessary, encouraging your human companions to do the same. The dogs in the group will quickly learn the rules. Remember, a wolf pack usually consists of only 5 to 8 dogs at a time. You don't need to be around 10 to 20 dogs for your dog to benefit from and enjoy the company of his own kind. Travel. Any dog owner knows the perils of taking your dog on a trip. When we put our dogs in a car or in carrying cases for airplane, train, or boat travel, some can become dizzy, some will vomit, and some will drool or pant the whole time. Some dogs become overexcited and won't calm down. Other dogs develop a trapped feeling, which produces a defensive type of fear aggression. They'll snarl and bite and won't stop whining or barking. The reason these dogs are miserable when it comes time for them to travel is because they weren't in calm, submissive states of mind before they were put into the car or carrier. We need to condition them to associate travel time with relaxation. Once again, every time we are going to expose our dogs to something that is unnatural for them, which includes travel in a car or plane, the best thing we can do for them is to prepare them beforehand. Naturally, exercise is the first part of this equation. Before we put them in the car, in the kennel or carrier, we have to walk them. Yes, I'm telling you again to take your dog on yet another long, vigorous walk. If it's a very long drive or airplane flight, add a backpack or an extra half hour on the treadmill. Your goal is for your dog to be absolutely tired out by the time you put him in any enclosed space. He'll be in his natural resting mode, so it will make sense for him to stay quiet for a long period of time. Of course, some dogs naturally love to ride in the car because their owners let them stick their heads out the window. When your dog has his nose out the car window, it's a more exciting experience for him than it would be for a human going to a 3D sense-surround smellorama virtual reality movie. That's because of the scents. Thousands and thousands of different scents, familiar and unfamiliar, hitting your dog's nose every second. If there are 5 cars in front of you, your dog is picking up every single scent present in each of those cars. If you're passing by a farm, your dog is picking up the scent of every animal on that farm. Dogs get incredible joy from this experience, entertainment, satisfaction, and psychological stimulation. But I don't suggest you allow this, because it's physically very dangerous for your dog. A pebble or a piece of debris could get in his eyes, and too much air could harm his ears. Also, so much stimulation could get him overexcited. Instead, once you've made sure your dog is in resting mode in the car, crack the window open just a little bit, but not enough for him to get his head through. Though the air he smells this way will not be as intense in concentration, he'll still be able to pick up many fascinating scents without any risk to his health. Moving. I have a lot of clients who will come to me for the first time after a big move. They'll say, "My dog was perfect before we got the new house. Now he's showing this or that unwanted behavior. He's become this, he's become that." These clients don't realize how they have contributed to their dog's newfound symptoms. I'd like you to know how those symptoms can be avoided altogether. In nature, dogs move all the time. There's nothing they love better than exploring a new environment. But the way we humans move is not natural to them. When we're getting ready to move house or apartment, our dogs have no idea that we're going to be migrating to a new territory, but they always sense that something dramatic is about to happen. First, they see everything familiar about their world being taken away. Then, they sense all the conflicting energies the humans are bringing to the move. The excitement, the tension, the stress, or the sadness. When people are distressed about leaving their home, this becomes weak, negative energy to a dog. While we're wandering our empty houses, crying about how much we'll miss the old neighborhood and reminiscing about how our children were born there, our dogs only understand that something really bad is happening. Then we throw them in the car or stick them in the kennel and put them on a plane. They don't know they're going to Ohio. They don't know they're going to New York. They don't know they're going to Michigan. When we get to the new empty house, we let them out and then expect them to adjust even faster than we do. They're already anxious from the move, picking up on our emotions and associating all of it with something very traumatic. That's why when they arrive at the new house, behaviors that you never saw before will show up. Dogs are not pieces of furniture. We can't simply box them up and move them from place to place without expecting them to be affected by it. If you live in a neighborhood near the place you will be moving, I suggest you take your dog on a walk there 2 or 3 times before the move, from your old place and back, if possible. Dogs are very sensitive to new environments, and when the real moving day comes, they'll know that they've been there before. If you live far away, follow the procedures I've outlined for traveling with your dog. Then, when you arrive, guess what you're going to do. Even though you are going through your own grieving process or your own emotional transformation, the moment your dog arrives at your new home, you have to take him for a walk. This walk isn't just to tire him out. It's also to help him adjust to the unfamiliar environment. This is a walk that must last more than 1 hour. Though it's impossible for most people, I'd recommend you make it 3 hours or more. It'll do you good after all your traveling, and will help you relieve some of your own moving day stress as well. Perhaps you can switch off dog walking and unpacking responsibilities with the other members of your household on that first day. Whatever you do, however, consider this walk a milestone event in your dog's life. This is the walk that will bring him back to understanding that you have migrated to a new territory and will make that migration a more natural event. If you've walked your dog for more than an hour, he should be tired and ready to relax when you bring him into your new house. Feed him and then introduce him to the home, 1 room at a time. Don't let him wander around on his own. Many of my clients made the mistake of doing this simply because they were too busy unpacking to bother with their dog. They saw that their dog wanted to explore, and they let him roam all over the new house, even before they had had a chance to explore it themselves. These owners were punching out on discipline. Remember, it's not his house, it's yours. If he's able to own it before you, then he becomes the dominant one in that space. I suggest you introduce your dog to 1 room, say the kitchen, and keep the rest of the house off limits while you're unpacking. If he's had his introductory walk, he'll be in resting mode and happy to wait for you. When you're ready, take him from room to room, inviting him into each one just as you did when you first brought him into the house. He'll learn that this is the new den you share together, and that you are still the undisputed pack leader there. Introducing a new dog to the pack. Sometimes I see clients who have tried to solve a behavior problem, say separation anxiety, by bringing another dog into the home. Despite their best intentions, this can be like dropping a lighted match into a can of gasoline. If you're dealing with two dogs, at least one of them has to be balanced. If you're dealing with a multi-dog household, all of those dogs in the original pack have to be balanced. There simply cannot be a successful introduction between dogs when more than one of them is unbalanced. Even if your pack consists of only you and one dog, introducing a new dog into the pack should be a carefully thought-out process that takes the dog's balance and energy, not to mention your own, into consideration. Remember Scarlett, my French bulldog and good luck charm at the center? She had the unfortunate experience of being an unstable dog dropped into the middle of an unstable pack in her owner's home. When Scarlett came along, all the dogs that were already in the household were unstable and living a life free of rules, boundaries, and limitations. One dog was petrified of everything, and another one was fear-aggressive and possessive of everything. Even the humans in the household were unbalanced and undisciplined. Scarlett is a very sensitive dog. The minute she arrived, she picked up on this unstable energy, and her reaction was to fight, to attack the negative energy. She was also the youngest and the most high-energy and athletic dog in the house. She was just not going to put up with being bossed around by other unstable dogs. Unfortunately for her, her owners had already developed attachments to the dogs that were already living there. So those dogs had seniority. Scarlett was just the newcomer. And because she was the new girl, she got blamed for everything. That's why, when her owners wouldn't change, I had to get Scarlett out of that situation. Just as you might when choosing a dog for yourself, choose for your existing dog a dog with compatible energy. Don't choose a dog with a higher energy level than your dog. Just as in dating, dogs don't have to like all the same things to get along, but they do need to share the same basic temperament. Most people, when they bring a new dog into a situation, will favor the dog that was already there. They start with favoritism right off the bat because they feel guilty for bringing a competitor into their dog's home. They don't want the dog to feel jealous. We often interpret the very natural period of deciding who's the more dominant and who's the more submissive in a pack of animals as jealousy. Perhaps dogs do experience something like our emotion of jealousy, but more often we write the script of that story. The reason behind the jealousy is the fact that the new dog has brought a higher level of energy or a competitive energy to the dog that is already comfortable with the environment as it was. Still, many owners will fret about this, thinking, "Now my dog's upset with me. My dog hates me." They then project yet more negative energy. When things between the dogs and the owner continue to go downhill, they take their dog to a pet psychic. The psychic will say that the two dogs were ancient rivals who didn't get along in a past life. You think I'm exaggerating? This is a mild version of some of the stories I've heard from my clients. You need to treat both dogs equally from the calm, assertive position of pack leader. Dogs who are followers in a pack don't fight one another for the number two and number three positions. They should be concentrating all their energies on following your rules, boundaries, and limitations. If you are truly a solid pack leader, the dogs will have no choice but to get along. Two submissive minds will be able to live and play together successfully. Two dominant minds will challenge each other and make your life miserable. There are certain situations where I would encourage a little more of a dominant, submissive relationship between a new dog and an old one. I recently shot a story for the second season of Dog Whisperer that was all about bringing in a companion for a dog that was already in the home. The segment is called Buford's Blind Date. Buford being a tough-looking but very calm, stable, but unsocialized boxer. Buford was a prime candidate for getting a companion, but his owner, Bonita, was not a 100% committed, 100% calm, assertive pack leader. Though a very laid-back lady, she needed a lot of guidance before bringing another boxer into the home, and I knew I couldn't count on her to provide strong leadership for two powerful dogs. I went with Bonita to Boxer Rescue in Sun Valley, California, to help her choose Buford's new platonic bride. Even though Buford, being a mellow guy, could have gotten along well with a number of different dogs, I had to keep Bonita's energy and level of commitment in mind in the selection process. She needed a dog that would ease into the household without making a lot of added work for her. We chose Honey, a petite, friendly, but extremely calm, submissive girl with a coat the color of smooth milk chocolate. Once we got Honey home, I allowed Buford to establish dominance immediately. Though he and Honey both are fixed, I allowed him to mount her in a dominance position. I also instructed Bonita not to give any affection to Honey for 2 weeks. Bonita is a woman who loves dogs, so this was a terribly difficult assignment for her. But it was important that she gave Buford the space to be dominant over the other dog before Bonita began her relationship with her. In essence, I was giving Buford the job that the human usually has, introducing the new dog to the rules of the house. In his balanced state of mind, Buford would probably do a more consistent job of it in those first 2 weeks than Bonita would have. When introducing a new dog to a household, make sure your existing dogs all have had plenty of walks and energy-draining exercise before the big meet-up. Make sure they are calm and submissive. Even if you are feeling nervous about your new dog meeting your baby, you have to understand that you can't share that fear, tension, nervousness, or insecurity around dogs. By doing so, you would pretty much be ensuring that their first meeting was a bad experience. If you're not feeling comfortable with introducing the dogs inside the house, then do what many people do. Introduce them on neutral territory. Then, at the end of the day, invite them both into your home together. Most important, however, you need to know your dog before you think about expanding your household. Make sure your dog isn't frustrated and doesn't have fear aggression or dominance aggression related issues. If you have access to other dogs, do some research by watching how your dog interacts with them in various situations. Watch them closely at the dog park or on a dog play date. This will show you what areas of your dog's behavior you need to work on before you can bring any new friends home for good. Dogs and the life cycle, aging and death. When we live with a dog for many years, we inevitably have to watch that dog age. Dogs have a shorter life cycle than we do, an average of 13 years to our 77. So unless we adopt them when we are elderly, there's a likelihood they will go through old age before us. This can be a heartbreaking time for many dog owners and families. But one of the things I believe animals come into our lives to teach us is that aging and death are part of nature. That in living life, we must experience and accept death as merely another phase of nature's life cycle. Dogs celebrate life, and they're okay with death. In fact, they are much better with death than we are. We need to look at them as our teachers in this department. Their natural wisdom can help us find comfort when we are facing our own human frailty and death. If a dog gets sick, say is diagnosed with cancer, it does not perceive its illness the same way we do. We'll feel sorry for the dog and flood it with sad, mourning energy every time we look at it. But that energy does nothing but create a negative environment for the dog. If a dog comes back from the vet with a cancer diagnosis, it's not thinking, "Oh my God, I've got only 6 months to live. I wish I'd gone to China." Dogs live in the moment, regardless of whether they have cancer or not, regardless of whether they're blind or not, regardless of whether they're deaf or not. No matter how dire their situation, dogs keep living in the moment every single day. I recently did a seminar for 350 people in Texas. A dog from a local shelter was sitting near me up front. That dog had been diagnosed with cancer recently, but you couldn't imagine a dog that was more downright utterly happy. Everyone at the seminar was whispering, "That dog has cancer. Oh, poor thing." But the dog didn't care about them feeling sorry for her. She was having a wonderful time, just being a balanced, calm, submissive dog in an interesting new environment. One thing we can learn from dogs is how to appreciate and enjoy life in its smallest detail every single day. The decision to put a dog down when it's suffering is one of the hardest ones we humans can face. This highly personal decision, in the end, comes down to your own conscience, spiritual beliefs, and your private connection with your dog. One of my clients described making that decision only at the moment when all the lights went out in her pet, despite the fact that he was still living and breathing. The best wisdom I can offer you in such a painful situation is that when your dog does finally pass, he has probably lived a fuller life than you have. Your dog has savored every moment on this earth. He is leaving it with no unfinished business, no regrets. Human beings are the only animals who actively fear death, who actively dread death, obsess over it, and grieve over it, that is, before it happens. Dogs have so much to teach us in this area. A dog lives in the moment, every day. A dog lives every day to the fullest. Do dogs grieve? Yes. Recent research has proven that many animals grieve their dead, especially family members, mates, or those with whom they've bonded deeply. But for most animals, grief is simply a phase they pass through on the way back to balance. In the wild, if a pack leader dies, the pack will spend some time mourning the loss of their leader and going through the difficult transition to a new pack structure. Then they'll move on. As I've said before, psychologically, dogs move on much more quickly than humans, that is, if we let them. If one dog in a two-dog household dies, of course the other dog will mourn the one who passed away, but it's natural for that dog to then move on to his normal level of balance, unless humans prevent him from going there. It's we who hold him back from what his nature is telling him to do, to move forward, to live life to the fullest. You'd be surprised how many cases I have had where one dog in the family died and the surviving dog suddenly had issues he never had before. The family will call me in and say, "He just can't get over Winston's death." I'll look around the room. There will be photos of Winston everywhere. There'll be souvenirs from the funeral, an urn of ashes on the mantel. The curtains will be drawn. The house will be dark and dusty. The dog didn't arrange the house like this. I'll ask when Winston passed away, and they'll say 6 months ago. 6 months! 6 months is an eternity to a dog. For a dog to linger in a state of depression for that long isn't natural. Dogs are more than willing to return to the balance and stability they knew before. In these cases, the human beings were the ones dwelling in a state of grief, unwilling to move on. The dog was merely picking up on the tragic energy and depression emitted by the humans and was being dragged down by it. These are cases where the humans needed grief counseling in order to stop projecting onto their dog their own unwillingness to move on. They had to first accept and then deal with their own issues. I also get an inordinate number of cases where a new dog has been brought into a household after the recent death of a dog. The new dog is supposed to be a substitute for the dog who's gone. Many times in these cases, the substitute dog was brought in too soon, while the humans, and sometimes the other dogs in the household, were still processing their grief. When you bring an animal into a house full of sadness, you introduce it to an environment that is nothing but soft, weak energy, completely negative energy. There are no strong pack leaders in a home in mourning. In a recent case of mine, a new Great Dane puppy had taken over the household and was making life miserable for the husband, wife, and the original family dog. The puppy was not a naturally dominant animal, but the moment it walked through the door, it sensed a leadership vacuum. As difficult as it may be, I advise you to wait a little while after your pet dies before you bring in a new one. Wait until you're ready to open the curtains, let the light in, and laugh again. Then you'll be ready once again to be the pack leader and to provide a healthy, balanced home for the new dog in your life. Chapter 9. Fulfilling Our Dogs, Fulfilling Ourselves. Though it may be a blow to our oversized human egos, the truth of the matter is, we need dogs more than they need us. If humans were to disappear from the face of the earth tomorrow, dogs would manage to survive. They would follow their genetic blueprints and form packs, in much the same way their wolf relatives still do. They would return to hunting and would establish territories. They would continue to raise their pups very much as they do today. In many ways, they might be happier. Dogs don't need human beings to be balanced. In fact, most of the difficulties and instabilities domestic dogs suffer arise from their being in unnatural situations, living with us behind walls in this modern industrialized world. I've said before that dogs are from Pluto and human beings are from Saturn. It's more accurate to say that dogs are from Earth and humans are from outer space. In so many ways, we humans are different from every other being that shares this planet with us. We have the power to rationalize, which includes the power to fool ourselves. That's what we do when we humanize animals. We project our own images onto them in order to make ourselves feel better. In doing so, not only do we do harm to those animals, but we also distance ourselves even further from the natural world in which they exist. What we seem to forget is that we still have access to the very same world they inhabit. That's why indigenous peoples in the deserts, in the mountains, in the forests, and in the jungles are able to survive there for generation after generation. They are Homo sapiens, just as we are. Yet they are fully in tune with their animal natures. They live comfortably in both worlds. Here, in civilization, we have detached ourselves from that natural world by defining ourselves exclusively as the superior species, the species that creates, the species that develops. We continue to kill off that better, more natural side of ourselves when we become the species that destroys whole ecosystems for the benefit of money. No other species destroys Mother Nature the way we do. Only humans do that. Yet, no matter how much we ravage the earth, our animal natures yearn to be fulfilled. Why do you think we plant trees along the freeways? Why do we put waterfalls in the lobbies of high-rises? Why do we decorate the walls of our homes with paintings of landscapes? Even the tiniest inner-city apartments often have window boxes with plants in them. We'll spend a year's worth of savings just to take a one-week sanity-saving vacation by the ocean, by the lake, by the mountains. That's because, without some connection with Mother Nature, we feel isolated. Our world feels cold. We feel unbalanced. We die inside. In America, And in some other cultures of the world, dogs and the other animals we bring into our homes serve as one of our most important links to Mother Nature. We may not even know it consciously, but they are our lifelines to a part of ourselves that we are at the brink of losing altogether. When we humanize dogs, we cut ourselves off from the vital lessons they have been put here to teach us: how to experience the world through the truths of our animal instincts, how to live every moment and every day to the fullest. When we take dogs into our homes, it's our responsibility to fulfill their instinctual needs so they can achieve balance. Dogs don't care about doing tricks. They don't care about winning trophies. They don't care if their collars have bling. They don't care if you live in a big house or even if you have a job. They care about other things, like the solidarity of the pack, like bonding with their pack leaders during migration, like exploring their world, like living in the simple joy of a single moment. If you fulfill your dog in these ways, by giving him exercise, discipline, and affection in that order, your dog will happily and willingly return the favor. You will witness the miracle of two very different species communicating and bonding with each other in ways you never thought possible. You will achieve in your relationship with your dog the kind of deep connection you always dreamed of having. I sincerely hope that with this book, I have helped you find a place to begin in your quest for a better, healthier relationship with the dogs in your life. The golden light of magic hour begins to descend on this deserted Southern California beach as I leap into the middle of a shallow wave and throw a tennis ball with all my might. Yelping with joy, every dog in the pack bounds after it, competing to be the one that gets to bring it back to me, but never fighting with one another for its possession. Anyone who knows dogs knows what a miracle this is. But I'm a good pack leader, and they're good followers. The rules are the rules, and everybody knows it. Carlitos, a three-legged pit bull, gets the prize this time, a testament to his sheer determination. The others bark after him as he hobbles back to me, dropping the soggy ball into my hand and looking at me with utter bliss in his eyes. I rub his head, then run back to the shore and throw the ball again. The dogs leap back into the surf. For a moment, I'm feeling what they're feeling: the cool, salty sea on my skin, the thousands of coastal scents in my nostrils, the soothing rush of the surf in my ears. I'm feeling all the pure joy of this one fleeting moment, and I owe them for that. I owe them everything. The sun is red on the rim of the Pacific as we trudge up the rocky path back to the van. We're all exhausted, but happy. Tonight, all 40-plus dogs at the center will sleep soundly. I'll sleep well, too, knowing that I've helped fulfill their lives, just as they have already succeeded in fulfilling mine. Caesar's Glossary of Terms. 1. Calm, assertive energy. This is the energy you need to project to show your dog you are the calm and assertive pack leader. Note, assertive does not mean angry or aggressive. Calm, assertive means always compassionate, but quietly in control. 2. Calm, submissive energy. In nature, this is the appropriate energy for a follower in a dog pack, and thus the ideal energy for a dog to project when living in a household with humans. Signs of calm, submissive energy include a relaxed posture, ears held back, and a nearly instinctual response to the pack leader's commands. 3. Exercise, discipline, and affection in that order. These are the three ingredients for creating a happy, balanced dog. Most dog owners give only affection, or don't provide these three necessities in the correct order. A. Exercise. Walking a dog at least 1 hour every day, and in the correct way. B. Discipline. Giving a dog rules, boundaries, and limitations in a non-abusive manner. C. Affection. A reward we give to our dogs and to ourselves, but only after the dog has achieved calm submission in our pack. 4. Master the walk. The walk is an extremely important ritual for a dog. It needs to take place a minimum of twice a day for at least 30 to 45 minutes each time, so that both the dog's mind and its body are given a workout. It's also important that the owner act as the dog's leader during a walk. This means the dog walks next to the owner or behind him or her, not pulling ahead. If a dog is walking a human, the dog perceives itself as pack leader at that moment, and the human is not in control. 5. Rules, boundaries, and limitations. A. Dogs need to know that their pack leader is clearly setting the rules, boundaries, and limitations for their life both inside and outside the house. B. Anger, aggression, or abuse toward a dog will not establish you as pack leader. An angry, aggressive leader is not in control. Calm, assertive energy and daily consistent leadership behavior will make enforcing the rules easier. 6. Issues. If a dog doesn't trust its owner to be a strong, stable pack leader, it becomes unclear about its correct role within the pack. A dog that is confused about who is in charge is actually concerned about the ability of the pack to survive, so it attempts to fill in the missing leadership elements, often erratically. This can cause aggression, anxiety, fear, obsessions, or phobias, what I call issues. 7. Balance. A balanced dog is in the state Mother Nature wants it to be in. As a calm, submissive pack follower, who is fulfilled physically with exercise, psychologically with rules, boundaries, and limitations, and emotionally with affection from its owner. 8. Dog training. Conditioning a dog to human commands. Sit, stay, come, heel. Isn't what I do. 9. Dog rehabilitation. This is what I do. Help a dog with issues to return to a balanced state of calm submission. Sometimes it may appear that I can fix a dog instantly. But as I've said, a dog is not an appliance that can be sent out for repairs. Permanent dog rehabilitation can occur only with a calm, assertive, stable, and consistent owner. 10. Nose, eyes, ears, in that order. I remind dog owners that dogs see the world differently from the way we do. We communicate using our ears first, then our eyes, and lastly our nose. Dogs begin with the nose, then the eyes, and lastly the ears. Allowing a dog to experience our scent before we engage it in eye contact or speak to it is one way to establish trust early on. 11. Humanizing a dog. Many owners make the well-intentioned mistake of thinking of their dogs as children. I advise people to try to see the world through a dog's eyes. Cute outfits, fancy dog food, and a millionaire's mansion will not make for a happy dog. Regular exercise, a strong, stable pack leader, and affection that's earned will result in a dog that's calm and balanced. 12. People training. When I am called in on a job, many owners assume it's their dog that's the problem. I try to help people understand that their own behavior has a powerful effect on their dog, and I offer them suggestions for retraining themselves to be calm, assertive pack leaders. This is John H. Mayer. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Caesar's Way, the natural common sense guide to understanding and correcting all common dog problems by Caesar Milan with Melissa Jo Peltier. Published by arrangement with Random House Audio Publishing Group, a division of Random House, Inc. Text copyright 2006 by Caesar Milan with Melissa Jo Peltier. Production copyright 2006, Books on Tape.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.